This is episode 387.
When you go to the doctor or see your personal trainer, do you feel a little bit like a naughty kid that hasn't done their homework? The way that we're made to feel in medical and health appointments is that we're there to do what we're told or to stop wasting their time. But the problem is, a lot of the advice is not personally relevant and is devoid of meaning in the context of your own life, and therefore, you don't feel empowered to actually go and do the advice that you were given. In this episode, we discuss how to change the narrative with your medical appointments so that you feel empowered and you leave wanting to do the things that are necessary to get healthy again, rather than thinking you have to do this so that your doctor or your PT gives you a gold star. This is a complete reframing of how to think about health and wellness that allows you to be in the driver's seat, advocate for your own health and needs, and get what you want out of the appointment or the program that you're in. So, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Thank you for choosing this podcast to be the one that you're listening to right now. God knows our download numbers would suck without you hitting play. So I'm sending a great deal of thank you energy over to you right now. If you're new here, welcome. And if you're not, then you probably already know that in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. The links to inquire about our emotional binge and overeating courses are in the show notes below. Now, the next order of business already is for you to meet this fantastic woman that is Antoinette Bernardo. She's a dedicated nutritionist, coach, mentor, clinical advisor, and functional diagnostic practitioner who helps you to uncover the interplay between health and chronic illness alongside human development and behavior. Antoinette's coaching is a collaborative process, and refreshingly, she respects her clients' autonomy and decision-making, combining her knowledge of nutrition science, diagnostic, and behavioral psychology to empower you, the client, to discover your own solutions and make informed decisions about your health. Antoinette, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Maddie. What an introduction. Thank you. And it's wonderful to be with you today. Really excited to be with you and your listeners.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I know that after last time we spoke, we could probably have 15 podcasts on different topics because there was just so many things we were vibing on.
Yeah.
But I really want to start with the connection point and just a bit of a shout out to Reed Davis from Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. He was on episode 339. He was the one that connected us.
Absolutely. And I second that. A great big shout out to Reed. He's a phenomenal man who's done incredible things around the world. So huge respect for him. And thank you, Reed. Thank you, Maddie.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's a good question to start with, which is How did you end up in the FDN world as a mentor and a clinical advisor? Because you've had such a diverse background.
Yeah, very great question. So my journey began a very long time ago. And after some official studies within nutrition science and some health coaching, I feel very old when I talk about these things because it feels like many, many lifetimes ago, I lived in various countries. You probably have by now picked up that I am an ex-South African living in Australia. But as part of my training and my studies, I lived in the UK and then in Belgium and then in Sydney and Melbourne and now finally in Queensland. And after I studied, I did several other certifications and particularly coaching certifications. And I wanted to get back into diagnostics in particular. Diagnostics is a wonderful way for us to work with our clients where we're not doing any guesswork. We use tests and diagnostics and we don't have to guess what's going on. We have empirically validated data, markers that we can look for. And then we start working with our clients. And when I did a bit of research at the time, FDN came up as an option, one of the options. And I dove into that a little bit more, did the course, really loved it. But most importantly, also loved the people. It's a wonderful organization with amazing mentors, educators, which of course is Reed's business and his organization. And once I had done the course and started getting into the work, they advertised for some positions for mentors to help their trainees and students. And I applied for that, got that. And then it developed because I'm, of course, in Australia and it is a US-based organization, but with global practitioners and people sitting all around the world doing their work and using their methodology. And there we are. And then that's how I got involved with them. And I still am working with them daily. And I love it. I am a mentor and clinical supervisor for the Australian region, but I do encounter students and trainees from all over the world.
Yeah, amazing. Every time I end up on a podcast where FDN is part of the conversation, I'm always saying, I need to do this study, but I just haven't got around to it yet.
I think you should too. And I think you'll be surprised of what you may learn, even though you might have a background in nutrition and you might be a clinician, there's always some amazing nuggets. And I think other ways of thinking how we can work as clinicians and practitioners.
I'm certain there's stuff I can learn. Like, Yeah, I have no doubt at all. That's why I want to do it. It's on the list. I'm going to get there.
Great. Let me know if I can help you anytime. I'm here. I'm in your part of the world. So you just tell me when you're ready.
Yeah, that is refreshing, actually. So much of your education, content, coaching is US-based. So it's refreshing to find somebody that's located here that can help.
There's a whole bunch of us here. That's the good news. FDN is growing and it's growing in this region. We always have challenges with the Australian landscape and the regulatory landscape as we do in other parts of the world like Canada where things are quite strict, but we're growing in spite of that. And I think FDN as an organization is getting a huge spotlight in terms of the robustness of their courses and their certification. So really, really great, great organization.
And was a part of that discovery of FDN, but not just FDN, but health coaching and all of the other sort of education modalities that you went through, was part of that your own health journey?
It was indeed. It's a great question that you ask because I have this feeling that every time, well, I think for a lot of people, only because I mentor some of these students and trainees, is by the time they get to FDN, they have all been on a significant health journey. And for me, it was stress and burnout. And I got to the place where I was honestly burning the candle at all ends. That is a little bit also my personality. I think I really identify as that kind of typical type A driven person who likes to have a lot on the go, who likes to be busy. And that, of course, drives me a little bit harder. And I came from a corporate background, worked in the corporate industry for a long time in that corporate health industry, which was high-paced, very stressful. And I ended up in a place where I was really burnt out and stressed and my health was tanking. And I did the course, of course, ran all of my own tests and then had someone analyze those results for me. And I think like for everybody else that is on a personal journey, you get a little bit of a wake-up call and a shock because you look at it and you think, well, that's why I'm feeling so terrible. That's why I'm waking up every day and I've got brain fog and I can't remember names and I've got no energy and I've got a lack of motivation for everything in my life. And then it was a wonderful reminder of having the tests and the diagnostics help us really see what's going on. But then what follows is really important. And some of the work that I do is very much, I think, entrenched in that is we have this as a practitioner. I rely on the data and the tests and the diagnostics. And on the other side of that equation is I think what we as clinicians do and coaches, we give plans, we tell people what to avoid, we help them what to think about, how to avoid sugar cravings, all of those things that we do. But then there's what I call the magic in the middle. First, it begins as the messy middle. And then it becomes the magical middle. And it's that magical middle where all of my work is really centered around. And sometimes it can be a little bit controversial because it can fly in the face of the testing and the diagnostics and the directives that we get. Do this, or you have a coach or a clinician that says, or that tells you what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. And I always feel that there's a disconnect for the client in that type of methodology versus what is inherent to them and what feels like the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And it's interesting that you also said that you like the data and the diagnostics, but the magic in the middle can sometimes fly in the face of that. Can you shed a light on what sort of maybe seems a bit contradictory that actually ends up being useful?
Absolutely. I think if you think about when someone, when you've got a client or a patient that comes to see you, somebody comes to see you, let's say you have a specific health niche, whether it's digestive health or blood sugar regulation, cravings, whatever the case may be, you've always got someone that comes to see you, and they come to see you because they've got complaints. Things are not going well for them. They're on their own health journey. They can't seem to figure out what's going on. It might be something at work. They can't get a promotion because they don't feel energetic enough. They don't show up for work. They can't remember things. So effectively, you see someone. And then as a coach, you run the diagnostics, as we do as functional diagnostic nutrition practitioners, and we get the data back. And the data tells us, well, this person really has got, let's say, cortisol dysregulation. They're under a lot of stress. They're producing a lot of cortisol. Cortisol, as we know, as a hormone, can be very beneficial, but in huge amounts, and having it often several times a day can really result in a dysregulation of body processes and mechanisms within the body. It can cascade us into a very inflammatory state. So we start developing chronic illnesses, diseases, conditions. And then what happens is you're then left with this client who now wants some kind of a plan that they want to take away with them. They want something to work on because they now are aware of everything that the tests have said. Their gut's not working well. Their liver is a little bit congested. We see they've got lots of oxidative stress and cortisol dysregulation. And now they look at you and they say, well, where to from here? And now, as diagnostic practitioners, the testing is endless. You can test from now until next year. You can run a SIBO test and a mycotoxin test to check for mold in the house. You can do hair mineral testing analysis. There's so much that you can do. There's so many wonderful tools available to you today as a clinician and as a practitioner. However, the client now is in that place where they're saying, okay, well, what do I do? How do I fix this problem? And as clinicians and practitioners, I think what is happening is we give them a very defined plan. And that plan goes something to the effect of, well, if you're not sleeping enough or you're not sleeping well, then we got to work on your sleep and resilience and make sure that you get enough rest. Or let's say your diet is quite complicated. Let's say from the test that you run, you might actually discover some gluten sensitivities, or someone might even have celiac disease when they come to see you. So you have to give them some advice and things that they need to avoid or that they need to perhaps cut down on, or they have some food sensitivities. You can direct them in terms of what they need to do, for how long they should be cutting out those foods. And then you would also work on other areas. You would move on movement and exercise. If somebody is sedentary or they're sitting at a desk all day long, how do we get them to move more? How do we get them to build musculoskeletal or support their musculoskeletal system? How do we get them to expend some energy, burn off some of this stress? And what happens is the disconnect comes where, with all good intentions, the coach gives the client a plan. And that plan is a very directive one. Do this, don't do this. Avoid this, do more of that. Go to bed at 10 o'clock. That's a good time to go to bed. Avoid these things. And I think the disconnect for me as a practitioner, and sometimes a little bit of frustration, is that does that really change the status quo for the client? Because what we see often is that when the client continues to work with a practitioner for a set amount of time, they get a result. But when left to their own devices, they revert back to the way things were. They reach out for the sugary foods again. They have the food cravings. They gain the weight. They get all stressed again. And so everything that our plan included was great while they were working with you, mm-hmm. but no longer works. And we often refer to that as a cycle of trial and error, because we stay on that cycle of trial and error. And I, in my work, refer to it almost as it's exercising options. So imagine you say to me, your goal today is to step outside of the room. But while you cannot see the door to the outside, you are stuck in the room. And so what you and I do is we take this painting off the wall and we hang it somewhere else. We take the chair that we sit in and we move it over there. We take this keyboard and we move it over there. And that is what's called exercising your options. You're trying a lot of things, but nothing has a profound result. In fact, it is not, Maddie, getting you outside of the room. You are still stuck within the room. And so you're exercising your options, but you are actually not making a long-term change that results in a behavioral shift and something that becomes a new way of life. And my argument or support to that is that often the plan that you get from your practitioner or your clinician is their plan. It's a directive plan and it's their idea and it lacks personal relevance. It is not necessarily relevant to you. If you came to me tomorrow and you said to me, well, I want to lose 15 kilograms or 15 pounds. And I say to you, Maddie, I think tomorrow morning when you get up, you need to go and run 15 or 20 kilometers. You look at me and say, well, that's not really relevant to me. I'm a guy that doesn't even like running. I'm the kind of guy that loves a stroll in the park with my dog.
Yeah.
And so I think the plans that we get from our practitioners and our coaches are often lacking the personal relevance, and they don't take into consideration how our clients develop and behave over time.
Yeah. This is how I ended up in the emotional binge and overeating space myself. One, I had a few of those challenges myself, but for me, started in disease research, and for me, it was very much finding the cause. And once I became a nutritionist the first time, and I started telling people what to eat, I realized people weren't doing it beyond the appointment or beyond the time that they worked with me. And so I thought, what's the next layer? And it was that behavioral psychology, which is why I think you and I get on so well, is because we play in that space. But that's why I ended up in this sort of this space of like emotions driving behavior. Because it's a combination of building a solution that is personally relevant, but also understanding why it's so difficult to break up with the unhealthy behaviors because they serve an emotional purpose.
Yeah, they do. And I think that's such a great point because they serve an emotional purpose and they keep us what I term the discomfort zone. They keep us stuck in the discomfort zone.
Yeah.
So it's the zone where we are wearing the comfy slippers and we're actually quite unhappy. Nothing is shifting. Nothing is changing. And that change needs to be initiated by ourselves. It cannot be initiated by a third party. It cannot be initiated by a coach or a practitioner. Their role is perhaps to educate you. I think it's really beneficial working with someone that is a professional, that has the background, that has the experience, that has the knowledge, that has the education, because there is a part of that that is very relevant. You need to, if you've got celiac disease or if you've got an autoimmune condition, it's very helpful working with an expert to know these are the things that are going to serve your goals, but these are the things that are going to railroad you and are going to leave you feeling even worse. But the drivers to human behavior and change cannot come from a third party. It cannot be on a sheet of paper that says, do this by this time and you will feel better. Because the thing is, nobody is wired in a way to do something that somebody else tells them. If you are prepared to stay in the place, in the middle, the messy middle initially, if you're prepared to be there in the discomfort zone and feel the pain, feel the discomfort, and connect to what is tangibly real right in front of you, and you can surrender to that a little bit by softening your whole demeanor, relaxing into that. That is, for me, the moment when the mess has the potential to become magical, because that's when the surrender happens and the client or the patient says, hold on a minute, I first have to accept I am where I am. I might not want to be here, but now that I accept I am here, what is it that I can do to take a step into getting me outside of the room and not to stay with inside of the room?
Yeah, I really like that. Something that, as you were describing that, what it reminded me of was one of the things that I observed just through my own journey, through health, wellness, fitness, that type of thing, is that the doctor or the classic medical model and or the personal trainer, anybody in this world serves kind of like as an authoritarian. And so we end up with this parent-child dynamic between the authority figure or the credible figure, which is the doctor, the personal trainer, the nutritionist, whoever. And so you might get some good compliance whilst you're working with them because we've all got within us the desire to belong, be approved of, be accepted, be the good boy, the good little girl, right? And so we can attend our appointment and say, oh, look at my report card. I did so well. And the second that that authority figure is no longer around, you've healed the disease or your appointments are finished, you just go back to where you were before because you weren't fixing yourself for yourself. You were being appropriate in a social setting by gaining approval by someone you didn't want to be rejected by.
That is such a great point, and I'd love to build on that, because that whole psyche or that whole dynamic of parent-child behavior, if you think about that for a minute and you think about, you do all of these things and you get the approval, you feel good, it's all the good pat on the back, the parent says, well done. The minute that you fail, what happens in the dynamic then in the relationship? What typically tends to happen is the client or the child goes forth with guilt, because there's so much at stake to appease the parent or the coach or the clinician. Yes, I did this. Did you do this? Yes, I did this. Oh, yes, I did that. And that all feels great. And I get the accolades for it. The minute I don't do those things, I all of a sudden feel guilty. So now there's a whole another behavior set that we work with. We're working with a sense of guilt. And we are guilty that we didn't do it. We are guilty of that we didn't do enough. We already, I think, as adults in this world, carry a lot of guilt with us, whether it's generational guilt. I think we live in a time where all of us are trying to be good parents, good children, good colleagues, good siblings, and we don't always live up to that. So I think there's enough guilt. And do we need more guilt when we fail at something which effectively actually is someone else's plan, someone else's agenda, someone else's outcome, and someone else's success? And the only reason why they're driving so hard is because you've probably handed over a whole bunch of money and they're thinking, well, I've got to give them a result. And so I better give them this whiz-bang plan that says, these are the things you're going to do. And if you do all of these things, you're going to emerge out of your cocoon in the next 6 months, a new person. And when they don't, then we have an even greater problem.
Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, I'll try again tomorrow. It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments.
Yeah, and I think from personal experience as well is that once that guilt, shame, embarrassment sort of complex starts to come up of, oh, I didn't do the things and my next appointment is here, or I've gotten a message or communication, somebody checking in and I've got nothing good to show. Sometimes clients can just vanish into the ether. They literally, like I've had the experience of checking in and being like, hey, is everything okay? Haven't heard from you for a while. Like, and just delete, block, goodbye. Forever, not a word, not a single word, not even a cancellation of credit card details, like, because there's so much shame associated with not having followed through.
Absolutely, shame and guilt. So I think we're on the same page and we agree. So the magical question here is, So what can we as clinicians or practitioners do differently? How does a model, a typical old school model, like you said, I go off to the doctor, I get this advice, your cholesterol's high. Oh, you've got to exercise more and you've got to avoid saturated fats. That's the old school approach. And the client goes away and actually nothing changes. Nothing changes. They might even have a cardiac episode. We know that nothing shifts. So what does a session look like that is not driven by a directive, an agenda, or an outcome?
That's a good question, because the other part of that puzzle that I would suggest is usable for most people is that, and especially in this world of personal brands where we follow people that embody values and lifestyles and choices that we wish we could also join, which in a kind of subcategory is a very religious idea that we want to attach ourselves to somebody that we see as greater than us. But people also need like leadership, and they want to be led by people that know what they're doing. And so I feel like I personally wrestle with this of like, at what point am I holding people to account, or at what point am I just holding up a mirror to them? And this bounce between leadership and, hey, I'm just here to cheer you on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are some answers to that in terms of the type of coach or the type of practitioner you are. I think, for example, a coach who's accredited with the ICF, which is the International Coach Federation, their methodology is very strongly based in the fact that you always have to appreciate that the client is whole already and that they have all the answers within themselves. They do not need someone that'll tell them what to do, how to do, and when to do it. All they need is a support, a collaborative approach with another coach or another human being that can ask powerful questions. And those questions are hopefully a process that will evoke that sense of awareness, self-awareness, and then they decide what it is they want to do next or how they want to do it, not you as the coach or the mentor or the clinician. You step away and you ask the questions. Now, the question, I guess, there is that can pure coaching, if I call it that, pure coaching, can it really be non-directive? Because you can even structure a question in a very loaded way that sounds like it's a question, but it really is you giving a directive. So I think what I'm really saying is, can you have a clinical session or a session with a client where it is completely non-directive? It is free of agenda. It is free of an outcome. And all you are doing is you are practicing active listening. You are listening to what the client is not saying. You are also listening to what it is they are saying. And you ask a question based on what is in front of you and not what is going on in your mind. So you're not preempting something which is really, again, your agenda and you setting the journey versus asking a question out of genuine curiosity. Oh, ask a question as if this is the first time you've ever heard it and you are genuinely curious. What is the client going to do next? And what would they like to do next? And what feels right? Or this has just come up. How is it manifesting? Do they feel it in their body? How does it feel? How does it feel energetically? And so those type of questions I find very helpful in my practice, because it takes me immediately out of the equation and it makes it all about the client or the patient.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think people, well, maybe you can share, do people find that autonomy or that invitation to self-leadership scary, or they're not sure what to decide or what to commit to or where to go?
That's a great question. And I think it's different for everyone. I think if you're dealing with someone who's naturally a leader, they're quite happy to step into that sense of leadership, that sense of power, and they will decide what's right for them. They will take a question like that and they can confidently give you an answer. They know the way, they know what's required, and they know themselves intimately. Then you'll have a client that will show up and say, I have no idea, but I'm really curious about that. And yeah, maybe with your questions, they can come up with the answer, but then you'll have another client that says, no idea, and I need some direction, or I need some input. And that's where a mentor comes in really well, because a mentor is someone that, or where it implies someone has enough experience in that field and can actually step in and say, well, I can share with you how I've done it previously or how it maybe is done or what the science says about it and what is the evidence around that. And then you can take that away and make what you want to. So I think it's going to depend on the client, but mostly to answer your question, I think if you ask powerful questions that can really open unseen doors for someone, I think most clients step into that space. They become quite energized by it. And they don't feel like this is then a task list that they are walking away with. They feel that this is, oh, wow, I came up with these answers. This is what's right for me. This is what feels right. This is what I want to do. And I get a buzz from that, to be honest. I get a buzz working with people that really step into that autonomy. And that's when I see the messy middle become the magical middle.
You said before that we're in this era of people being good parents and good children and everyone's trying to be good, good, good. I feel like this kind of allows the skill set to be there available for everybody to take ownership and be good for themselves, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why are we, I think if we look around the world, whether we're looking at politics or health, the health system, it appears to be broken. I firmly stand by that. I think we feel gaslighted by the medical system. That's why there's so many of these wonderful certifications, practitioners, coaches, clinicians popping up everywhere. I think the conventional models and systems are not serving us anymore. They're just not. They lack leadership. They're old conventions that are just not serving us. And so when you give someone the power, they step into it and they feel what it feels like to actually lead from the front and to lead from within, because as within, so without. And so when we take that ownership and we begin to change our own lives and we begin to decide what is actually right for us, what will work for us, what won't work for us, then we're effectively looking at a person now who becomes autonomous. They become leaders within their own right, and then they don't need you anymore. And for me, that is always my metric of success. My metric of success is the day that I become redundant, because when I become redundant, I know that I did my job well.
Yeah, I like that. I often say to people too, when they're inquiring about the program or looking into doing what I work with, I say, the goal is that you never come back. I don't want return clients.
Exactly. And I think the mistake I think today by some coaches is they want these clients long term. They want them to stay forever. Mm-hmm. And that's okay if there are new things to work on and you're going to be doing some other things. But as long, I think, as you realize as a coach or a practitioner or a clinician, that being redundant is really a good thing. It really means that your client has taken ownership. They show up, they grow up, they clean up, and they power up. And I think I use those terms in my practice because I think the first thing that we do is we wake up. That's awareness. Yeah. Then we show up. We show up, we start doing the work. Then we clean up. We clean up our own mess. We have to clean up our own mess in order to grow up, which is more about maturity frameworks. And growing up means fixing our personal relationships, looking culturally at what goes on beyond us. And then I think the final up is the powering up. What are we going to do to really step into our power, take control of the system and go forth?
What do you find are the things that that cause people to be resistant to any of those steps? Because the introduction to, hey, you're in the driver's seat now might be a little bit overwhelming for some people. And they're like, I don't know where to drive. I've never been here before. And I usually just do what the doctor tells me.
I think it's a great question. I think there's genuinely not resistance. There is hesitation and there might be lack of not knowing. So lack of confidence, not exactly sure. But I think if you ask a question like, have you ever been in this situation before? The answer almost always is yes. And then you ask them, so what did you do then? What worked for you? What didn't work for you? And when you take them back to that scenario, then all of a sudden they wake up to, yeah, that's what I did. And actually, that didn't work. Or you know what? That really worked very well. So I think there's ways and means to get there in the end. I think clients that resist, they say, whatever you resist persists. And so I think that is something for us as coaches to be aware of. If a client is resisting, things are persisting. So what are the things that we can do to support them to say, or to bring it to their attention that perhaps this resistance, whether you read it in their body demeanor, in the tone of their voice, in their hand gestures, whatever it is that you, for the cues that you're looking for, is I think there'll be things in there for you to ask and to note. Because as coaches, what we try to do is we're trying to get into our clients' heads. We are trying to listen to their own listening. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, then the magic kind of appears and it reveals itself. And then the clues are there. And then I think there's something that you can go with.
Do you think that if there's questions that you can maybe share in this conversation for people that say they're working with somebody who is that more coaching mentality, that conversational inquiry-driven process, that's also working with the doctor, that's also working with other practitioners? Like, and the reason that I ask that question is because you might go to one appointment and feel empowered and excited and like, I love hanging out with Antoinette. She makes me feel empowered and like everything's possible. And then you go and see the doctor as well, and then he just puts you straight back in your box, right? Is there, and then says, functional diagnostic nutrition or Maddie Lansdowne, whatever those hippies have got to say, don't listen to them. So do you find that there's like a framework or questions that can empower people to get their other practitioners talking in a more helpful way?
Absolutely. I think as a good coach or practitioner, clinician, you want to really own your question asking. You've got to be careful though to make sure that your questions aren't loaded and that they aren't leading either, because you want to really hold that genuine curiosity when you ask a question. But I think there are certain sections. I think things like goal setting questions, you can always as a coach or as a practitioner develop a set of questions where, for example, with goal setting, you can, for example, ask a question, what specific goals would you like to set in this section to enhance your overall health? That's a powerful question. Let the client decide what those measurable or specific goals are. Then how will you know that you've successfully integrated these practices into your life? Another great question. Let them answer. Wait, remain curious, hear what they have to say. What support or resources do you need to make these kind of changes? So that's a little bit around goal setting. Lifestyle. Let's look at lifestyle. So what is a balanced and fulfilling life look like to you? Because it's very different from me. And so how do your current habits right now support that balanced and fulfilling life? And immediately the client gets the question because they think, oh, the things that I'm doing every day actually doesn't support my goals. Mm. And I'm spending a lot of time on things that are really not going to drive me forward or help me go forward. So those are things. For example, things around diet. What is your relationship with food? That's a great question. How do you feel after you eat your meals, both physically and emotionally? Tell me a little bit more about that. Questions maybe around lifestyle. So what areas of your life are out of balance right now? If any, let them answer. Let them decide. So I hear you say that. So what changes could you make what changes, what can you incorporate more of that will move you towards the goal that you have? Fill in the goal, A, B, or C. You might think of things like, in what ways does your cultural background, as an example, shape your views on health and well-being? And that gives you a little bit of insight in terms of the cultural, the intersubjective of that person. What environments do they live in? Do they grow up in? What are the views around diet lifestyle in that culture or in that household? So you can continue to ask very powerful questions without ever once in all of that time giving advice or telling someone, oh, okay, well, that sounds interesting. I think you should. Any question or any answer in my life that starts with a, I think you should, or have you considered, and then they give me the answer, I tend to just block them out and go, no, don't need to hear that. Not personally relevant. Just this is not what I was thinking of.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's good that obviously you know yourself, and it's good for people to know themselves. I've had clients sit in front of me at the start as well and say, I'm someone that needs to be coached on finding the answer, not told the answer. Because if you tell me the answer, I'll be pissed off that you told me the answer.
I love that.
Same.
I love that.
It set the whole relationship up in, I know what's going on. I know how to do my job even better now. So thank you.
Exactly. And I think if we just give people the space and the time, they often will tell you what it is they love, what they dislike, how they love to work. They just often need that collaboration. They need the support. They need that conduit that takes them from A to B. They often, so often when I speak to people, they have such a good idea of where they want to go and how they would like to be or how they would like to feel, but they just don't know how to get there. And I think if you give them a roadmap, I always say the map is not the territory. That's the thing. You can tell people this is where you need to go from this point to that point. But what you don't tell them is that there's mountains to climb in between. So the territory and the terrain looks very different to the map itself. And so allowing them to unpack that a little bit, discover that, and think of things that they need and resources that they need to actually get to where they want to go, I think is a very important part of a process and how we as humans behave and develop.
Yeah, I really like it. I really like it. I think this conversation would be really refreshing for people listening that are thinking, oh, seeing Antoinette would be so much nicer than seeing my doctor.
I think sometimes you get a good doctor. And I personally think I've got a really good doctor, but even him, at times I have to go in there and I have to spar with him a little bit because he's got his medical hat on. He's got an average of 7 to 10 minutes with you. At the end of the day, he's probably going to write you a prescription and you're taking that away and you're taking a pill and you didn't really learn anything about yourself. You didn't learn how you got here. What got you stuck? What's going to get you moving forwards? And if that's even going to have a long-term effect. So I think it's an interesting time for the health industry and for the landscapes globally.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious if anybody wants to reach out to you, connect with you, work with you, where can they find you?
The best place for me, I mean, I have a website, to be honest with you. I've been so busy that it needs a bit of work, quite frankly, and I'm just not getting there. And maybe one day when I stop studying, I will actually hire someone and go, there it is, take what's in my head and put it on a web page. The best way to reach me is through LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn. I often write some posts, so I might put something out when I have some time, but that is the best way to connect with me. I would say I'm always up for a chat. I do, through my website, I do offer some chemistry calls. So those are free calls to check whether I've got chemistry with someone, whether we can work together. And that's an opportunity for me to ask them some questions, tell them a little bit about how I work, figure out what it is they want from working with me and whether we'd be a good match anyway. So there are a few ways, but I think LinkedIn is probably the best platform for me because that's where I connect with other like-minded individuals and potential clients.
Chemistry calls, that's so cute.
It's us nerds that'll call it a chemistry call, won't we? But there's got to be magic between you and the client. So,
yeah, I agree.
You know, there's got to be the magic because it doesn't matter how good I am or how good you are. If you and I don't have a rapport and we don't have chemistry and we can't work together, it's just going to be a flop anyway. Anything I say, anything that comes out of my mouth is just going to irritate you. So yeah, Let's make sure before we work together that there actually is a chemistry between us.
And do you, just on that a little further, do you have anything that you lean towards in regards to your speciality or conditions you work with, or you're just like, everybody come at me?
Do you know, it's a great question. And I always thought, one's always got to have a niche. You've got to absolutely have a niche because otherwise you're just talking to everyone. But the people I tend to attract into my life are people with stress and burnout. Very similar to my own health journey. And they're people that come to me and they do actually have a raft of conditions. Things are not working. And I guess because I have a science background and I can look at someone functionally, integratively and holistically, I can see if I think there's something completely out of my domain and I think they'd be better off on that piece working with another practitioner, then I'll just refer them out. But generally speaking, all disease inflammation starts with stress and burnout. When we have this thing called cortisol dysregulation, everything goes haywire in the body and everything that follows downstream is a mess. And so I tend to attract those people who are a bit stressed, burnout. They're corporate types. They might even be in the building industry. They're just people with a lot of stress. They're busy people, and they tend to connect with me.
Fantastic. Well, I'll put those links in the show notes below. So if you're listening and you think Antoinette is awesome, which obviously she is because she's hanging out here, go down to the show notes, click the links, connect, book a chemistry call because that's adorable, and get into Antoinette's world. But as we draw to a close here today, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about, Antoinette?
I would say the health information is you already know what is wrong with you. Dig deep, dig inside. Don't go looking for the answers outside. Go within, because once you delve within, everything will reveal itself.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time, and we'll catch you again soon.
It's been amazing to be with you. Really love this. Thank you so much, Maddie. I look forward to the next one.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.